RadioArchives.com presents The Phantom Detective Magazine from Winter 1950. The Tall Tomb, the 156th adventure of the Phantom Detective. Nemesis of Crime by Robert Wallace. Read by Milton Bagby. Desperate for a purpose in life, millionaire playboy Richard Curtis Van Loan dedicates himself to a one-man campaign to rid the nation of organized crime and big-time racketeers. Reborn from the ashes of war, Van Loan returns to find his home in the stranglehold of gangsters and murderers. Donning a domino mask and teaching himself deduction and the art of disguise, he takes on crime single-handedly as the mysterious Phantom Detective. His true identity known only by one person, Van Loan swings his way into mystery, a specially made platinum badge shaped like a domino mask his business card. This master of disguise, deduction, and psychology delivers his own unique brand of law and order to the underworld as the Phantom Detective. And now, the Phantom Detective's pulse-pounding mystery adventure, The Tall Tomb. Chapter 1. Bloodstains. Stratton Heights was none too aptly named, for it really nestled in a valley, with only a part of the town built upon the hills to the north and south. The higher these residential sections went, the wealthier were the families. In the valley itself lay the sprawling Stratton Mills. From the east factory came brass goods, from the west, finished products. The north factory was devoted to the manufacture of gray iron castings, and the south factory was the elite of the four. This one created drugs, from lowly aspirin tablets to highly secret propellants for the Air Corps. The giant factories supported the town. Other manufacturing enterprises were insignificant and generally dependent upon the Stratton Mills. Some 130,000 souls, directly or indirectly, relied upon these great factories for their livelihood, and the Stratton Mills had rarely disappointed them. There was one occasion back in 1921 when the entire town had marched against Alonzo Stratton and his despotic policies. Alonzo had taken one look at the mob and fled. That he'd suspected there'd be trouble was evident in the fact that he'd taken pains to ship his entire fortune elsewhere. All that was left were the four mighty mills, and these were promptly taken over by Loren Corson, who literally installed himself as president and still occupied that position. The mills had prospered as never before. The windows, broken by the angry mob, were easily repaired, and nobody thought much about that dark period in the history of Stratton Heights. The name of the city would have been changed if it had been feasible. Everyone wanted to forget Alonzo Stratton and his whole family, even though they'd started the city. It had been impossible to erase the name of Stratton, however. It was etched into cement and bronze and marble in too many places. Stratton Heights had a long main street with busy side streets, all of them leading to the hill streets along which most of the residential dwellings were located. At the very top, overlooking the whole town and everyone in it, was the old Stratton home, now occupied by Loren Corson. At 2 a.m, the city more or less slept. The hillsides gradually darkened until, one by one, there was only a pinprick of light here and there, where some nocturnal reader refused to put out the light. Main Street, with its tall buildings, began echoing footsteps, like the canyons of the greatest city of all, some 100 miles southeast. Patrolman Dunn had his nightstick hooked over his badge, and as it was after midnight, he was permitted to smoke the well-heeled, evil-smelling pipe which his wife forbade him to bring into the house. Patrolman Dunn tried the door of the corner jewelry store in the arcade building, peered through the window, and made certain everything was quite serene. Whistling softly, he moved on. A block further, he inspected the entrances of the Stratton Heights Bank and Trust Company.